You are listening to the Winning Edge podcast, where each week we have a conversation with a different member of the Winning Edge Business Networking Chapter located in Spring Hill, Florida.
Welcome to this episode of the Winning Edge podcast. I am your host, Chris Chambers, and I have the privilege and honor to have a conversation with the Sean Bradley. How are you doing today, Sean?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. So as we've come to do these podcast episodes, what we like to do, we like to talk about you a little bit. Who is Sean Bradley? Then we want to talk about your business with Keller Williams Realty in particular. We want to talk about how it is that you've gotten involved with BNI, how BNI has helped you and your business in particular. We want to talk about, when we're talking about BNI, we want to talk about membership committee because that's something you've been a part of here for a couple of years. And then we want to know what referrals we can get to you, what your ideal client or customer looks like, and then finally we'll kind of close it down with just a brief rapid fire section. Okay.
Oh, that sounds fun.
All right, man. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Who is Sean Bradley? Who is the Sean Bradley?
Well, my name's Sean Bradley. I'm happily married now, 19 years to my wife Julia, and two kids, two daughters. My oldest is Ryan, and my youngest is Riley. Ryan was valedictorian at Springstead last year, and she is off to University of Florida this year as a freshman. She's actually going to be doing her bachelor's and master's together in a reduced program in about 3 years in accounting. So very proud of her. And then my youngest, Riley, is following in her footsteps. I actually think she might be the smarter one of the two. And she is my athlete. She's a traveling soccer, go all over the state with that. She is in eighth grade but plays on a high school team. She's always played up a few years doing that. And then when she's not doing soccer, tonight I'll be heading to a basketball game. So she enjoys playing multiple sports, track, cross country. So she's definitely my little jock.
Yeah. Brains and brawn there. That's impressive. Now, as far as hobbies go, you mentioned that your daughter plays soccer. You play soccer as well.
Yeah, I do. I've been playing with an adult league for several years. You know, not to brag, but we are two-time reigning champions. I know my teammates will be happy I got that in there. But we have a good time. It's a over 30 league, so it's a bunch of adults running around trying to have a good time.
Right. Target on your back now, of course.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wouldn't want it any other way.
I know.
In addition to that, you also like to scuba dive?
I do. I did scuba diving professionally for a long time. I was a PADI course director, which is instructor trainer. And actually moved to this area and ran a dive shop up in Crystal River for over 10 years and enjoyed that industry and did it personally. And a lot of cave diving, a lot of wreck diving, drift diving. Did over 100 shark feeds in my career. I worked in the Bahamas. So I had a great time doing that. Ryan's certified. Julie's certified. Julie and I met on a diving trip, actually. And Riley will be certified soon.
Now, talk about that a little bit because Keith Voiles likes scuba dive, Dan Brown, Andrew Winiger, Jessica, a lot of folks that like to dive, like to scuba dive. as we were preparing, I mentioned I actually had a family accident that happened years ago where a family member and her fiance ended up going cave diving, didn't make it out. So you want to talk briefly about that, just kind of the dangers, and I believe you even have had some close calls as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, cave diving is definitely a different animal. Let's not leave out Sean May. He's actually a
scuba
diver.
Sean May, yeah, you're right. Yes, so. That's right. Absolutely.
And spear diver. But yeah, cave diving is a different animal. It's not your typical scuba diving adventure. Less than 10%, I think, of the scuba diving population actually even try it, and less than 10% of that 10% actually stick with it. I got heavily involved with a group for about 2 years. We were actually coloring in on our own maps and laying our own lines and having a good time doing that. But it is very technical. Line, light, and air, and then even when you do everything right and you have your backups, it's a particular type of diving that can grab a hold of you, and accidents can happen. Yeah. You know, so obviously had that in your family. A few scares for me, which was interesting, and those weren't the reason I quit. I just ended up getting disinterested with it and let it go. You would think I would have left when I got scared, but enjoyed it for the time that I did it and enjoy doing it now recreationally. Do a lot more spearfishing now than I used to.
Yeah. Any close calls with sharks?
No, not with sharks too much. Sharks are pretty easy. I enjoyed, when I worked in the Bahamas, I led the shark dives. They get into your fins and brush up against you and ram you a little bit, but they mostly wanted the food. They didn't want to mess with you, and they're pretty neat once you learn how to deal with them.
Yeah. Now, in addition to those things, you also like to travel?
Travel is definitely my main focus, especially with the girls. When I transitioned into real estate from the dive shop, one of the big things about the dive shop was it was a time suck. It was 16 hours a day, traveling from Spring Hill up to Crystal River, running the shop, closing it down. And, you know, the girls were at an age where for 2 years there, I missed a lot of their events. And so when I transitioned, I decided I wasn't going to do that. And making time to travel and having those experiences and being able to share those with the family, I always think I'm too busy for the trip that we have planned coming up, but the minute we go, I love it and have a great time. So we always put those on the calendar quarterly.
Yeah, absolutely. And so recent trips you made, D.C., you went not too long ago?
Yeah, we just went to D.C. last month. That was my first time there. Had a fantastic time. We walked as much as we could and then jumped on the e-scooters and rode them all around. And I just, it's hysterical to me that you can ride on an e-scooter right around Supreme Court and Library of Congress. And we had a great time. We just saw as many monuments as we could. Definitely need to go back and actually hit the museums. There's just too much there to cram into one trip.
Absolutely, no doubt. And then you also like to snow ski.
Yep. I grew up snow skiing. My aunt has a place out in Eagle, which is right next to Vail and Beaver Creek. So we try to go out there at least every year and go skiing. So we'll be going after Christmas. Both the girls have grown up skiing. Julie skis, but she enjoys sitting down by the fire with a book, and they bring wine and fresh baked cookies, and she lets us run all over the hills and everything like that. So I think that's what she enjoys about skiing more than actually doing it.
And then you also like to shoot. You're actually an NRA instructor, is that right?
Yeah, I got into shooting several years ago as another opportunity to go out and enjoy. And I go through phases of whether I'm shooting pistol or rifle or trap and skeet. I've been in a big trap and skeet phase lately, but Ryan came home from college last week and wanted to go shooting. We went up to the rifle range and went shooting, so I've forgotten how much I enjoyed doing that, so I think I'm going to take her when she comes back. We'll go do an action rifle event or a bowling pin event where we can do some competition.
So you mentioned you ran that dive shop in Crystal River, and then you decided to transition out of that. Is that the time you transitioned into Keller Williams?
Yeah, so when I left the dive shop and came back with really no direction, for me and my family, everybody was in real estate except for me. So I was really the last domino to fall. And when I had that break, I was enjoying my break very much, just really not doing much of anything. Mm-hmm. And my wife kindly urged me, along with other people in my family, that maybe I should, you know, have a purpose and go do something. So real estate was an easy fit. Me and Julie had always flipped houses. I'd helped my father when he built and ran a property management business. My grandmother's been a property manager my whole life. My mother was the team leader for Keller Williams back in the early 2000s. So lots of opportunities in real estate. It just makes sense. You know, I actually left the dive shop right before Thanksgiving, and by the time Christmas it came around, I'd already got my license and was looking to join a brokerage.
Mm-hmm. And you've been there now about, actually 4 years, starting in, coming January.
January, right? Will start my fourth year being licensed, So operating in real estate for decades and being around it and helping, but for me being licensed, 4 years.
And you also do some teaching or training?
I do. I enjoy teaching. One of our systems that we use to market property is called MLS, which is a multiple listing service. And as agents transition into the business, they need to learn how to be able to input and retrieve properties from that. So I do a lot of that teaching for different realtors around the county, whether they be in my brokerage or other brokerages, teach them that entry-level data system. It's a great funnel for me because most of them are going into residential, and being in commercial, a residential realtor is a great referral source for me because they can easily refer that property over to someone they know and trust.
And then also you fill in for the Hernando County property appraiser from time to time, do some training?
I do. Currently I'm a board of director for Hernando County Association of Realtors. And when we have new realtors that join the board, they go through an orientation process. And on that orientation, the property appraiser will come in. We have a very unique relationship with our property appraiser that doesn't exist in other counties. Fantastic website, fantastic service. And so whenever he can't make it, I'm able to go in and teach them what the property appraiser offers, because that's definitely going to be a part of any deal that you do in the county.
And then one other thing, you will do some teaching or training on ethics, in particular as it relates to real estate. Is that right?
Yeah, it's important that we have all of our realtors obviously operating ethically, truthfully, and faithfully with their clients, but also understanding what those specific requirements are, because there's things that you can do in good faith and trustworthy and honest, and you just hiccup on your paperwork or hiccup on the way that you present something. So it's always good to have a refresh. It's one of our core credentials that we have to do with our continuing education. So anytime I can get up in front and teach and educate, I definitely have a passion to do that.
And just a kind of example of that, there's actually some requirements for realtors to notify other parties they're engaging in negotiations with. Is that right?
Yeah, you definitely need to put out your commission split and what you're going to co-brook with that person. You need to be able to put that out and stick with it. You also want to be able to notify, you know, when you're operating with parties in a real estate transaction, they need to know that you are a licensed real estate broker and that you're not operating as yourself. You don't want to mislead people because you do have an expertise in that field, and they need to know they're dealing with a real estate agent.
And we'll come back and talk about, you know, some of the clients that you deal with, customers that you deal with on a regular basis. Before I do that, though, I did want to talk about B&I, obviously this being the Winning Edge podcast. I want to talk about B&I. So you hold the commercial realty seat in our chapter. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you were invited by Jessica Banville. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. International Networking Day.
Mrs. B&I.
That's right. And so you you'd never heard about B&I prior to that. Is that right?
I didn't. She shot me an invite for an International Networking Day, which I promptly blew off and told her that I couldn't make because 7 o'clock to me meant 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And so I was gonna have to go to a listing appointment at that point. And a friend of mine called me who was a realtor and said, "Hey, are you gonna go to this B&I thing? It looks pretty fun. I got an invite." And I said, "How are you going to go? You're supposed to be overdoing a listing with me." And he's like, "Oh, no, it's like 7 in the morning. So I called and verified with Jessica and went to the meeting, and I joined that day.
Yeah, joined that day. And you've been now in the chapter for how long?
My 2 years will be February. So it's been about a year and a half, I guess.
Yeah. Now, you decided not to jump in with leadership right away. kidding. Obviously, you've already served as the vice president of the chapter. You currently are serving in what capacity?
Right now, I am member relations, or what people know as issues and concerns. I was the vice president last year. You know how people, if anybody's listening out there, if you want to know how to become a vice president in a B&I chapter, the answer is you just don't ask enough questions.
Yeah.
And so 6 months in, I was asked to be the VP, and I thought, oh, that'd be a great position. I can be up there in the front and I'll be a backup role, and I'll be there when people need me. And
give folks an idea. How many hours a week in the VP role were you spending extra in addition to the time you already spent with B&I?
The way that I did VP, and honestly, I did a little bit more than I had to because I like to do the PowerPoints and I like certain ways I did the presentations, but it was 2 hours a day. It was 2 hours a day. Every day is what I average. Some days maybe only 1 hour, but then it's going to be 3 hours the next day. Wow. And for me, it was 2 hours a day. At the end, my last quarter, I got that down to 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday, where it wasn't on Saturdays and Sundays. But that's the way the job goes. You're kind of overwhelmed your first 90 days. You kind of get into a groove through that middle period. And by the end, you've got everything pretty much streamlined that you could easily do it again. And then obviously you're training the next person coming in and trying to help them and support them. And, you know, I couldn't ask for a better mentor. Jessica was a VP before me. Mm-hmm. She helped me more than I could have ever asked for. And I am trying to do that for Rory because she's just doing a great job.
Absolutely. And I did want to also talk briefly about membership committee, because the vice president also chairs the membership committee, right?
Yeah. So the membership committee is going to be your most influential people in the chapter. It's your five people that are basically making decisions on chapter policy, how the chapter is going to run, what may happen to different members in the chapter, and even who's going to join and who's going to leave the chapter. So
who are those roles? What are those roles that that make up the membership committee?
So you've got the VP, which is going to be the chair of that membership committee, and then you have four support staff. And so you have our community builder, which most people know as attendance. That's Jason Gunn this year. Then you have applications, which is Elizabeth this year, and you have reviews, and I apologize, I don't know all the brand new names like I should.
Member engagement.
Yep. And I believe you hold that seat.
I do.
And then we have member relations, which is issues and concerns, which is my seat.
Yep.
So you have those five people that are actively looking at any issue that may come up, any way to promote the chapter, any way to build the chapter, any way to maybe change policy that's going to help the chapter grow, and also dealing with the other side of that if there's any issues, concerns, anything that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. And So with membership committee, you mentioned 2 hours a day you're spending with VP. What kind of time commitment is membership committee?
Membership committee is what I would say VP is a above and over full-time position. Mm-hmm. Membership committee is a full-time position. It's really important that not only that you show up to membership committee meetings and leadership meetings, but you have to spend time behind the scenes. Just driving here today, I was contacted by a member who had an idea to improve the chapter and make the chapter better. You have to take time out of your day. I could have easily been talking about real estate or anything else on my way here, but I'm talking about BNI, and we had a BNI meeting this morning, and now I'm coming to a BNI podcast. Mm-hmm. That's the commitment it takes to be at membership committee, because if you don't have the full picture, you really don't need to be voting and making decisions that affect the chapter mm-hmm. if you're not going to put in that time. And so it's definitely a full-time position, and then the VP is a full-time plus.
Now, what I want, if you would, just kind of walk us through something, and then I want to jump back into Keller Williams and specifically how we can get you some referrals. But from the moment a visitor comes in, signs an application, right, pays the dues, what happens from that point?
So that application is going to be basically given to our application chair, which is Elizabeth at this point, and it's going to be her job to vet that person. That's going to be a multi-tier process, from a phone interview to calling references to verifying that there's no issues on Facebook, social media, the properly licensed, all the things that might go into a business. On top of that, she's going to reach out to the chapter, and she's going to see what the chapter knows about this person, good, bad, or indifferent. That feedback is so important when you see those emails that you reach out. Even if you think it's a great person, there may be only the people that think they've had negative responses. So you need to reach out on anybody that you know, or you just reach out and say, I don't know them. Once all that feedback comes in, it's going to be delivered to a membership committee. And then it just depends on the situation. You could have multiple people vying for the same seat. Mm-hmm. So the discussion there is pros and cons. Or you may have one person in a seat that's available. But it's going to be the right fit. And that's the membership committee's job. Every piece of the puzzle has to be the right fit. And if you try to jam somebody in, even though it creates growth to the chapter, it eventually will create recession, because that person's not going to be a good fit. And when we take people on, you want to take them on that you're going to be able to help them build their business as much as they help you, because Giver's Gain is where we come from fundamentally. And so it's always what we go back to a membership committee. Is this a person that we can help and that can help us, and we can be a good partnership?
Yeah. And two more things. One, with the membership committee, we've chosen to use the Power of One in particular as kind of the measuring stick for all of our membership. And that's kind of how we hold everyone accountable. I think you did a great job as the VP last year of bringing in that extra component of accountability to the group. And so with the Power of One, anybody not familiar, basically takes all the numbers, all of the drivers that we have as a member, puts them all in one place and gives us a number, right?
Absolutely. So it's basically, and I'm going to steal this from Jessica Manville, because she views it as her balance sheet. It's a snapshot of your year to date, your last 12 months rolling, everything that you've done as a member, whether it be attendance, one-on-one CEUs. So if you look at a balance sheet in a business, it's not always things you like to see. It's going to be some bad things, going to be some good things, and at the end, it gives you a total. The goal with the Power of One is for you to be able to self-assess, and the Power of One literally means, what is the one thing you can do that's going to improve your visibility and your ability to pass and receive referrals within the group?
Right. And then one thing that we've done in our chapter is the VP, the vice president, has stayed on as the chair the 1 year, the following year has stayed on the membership committee, so that there's some continuity. How do you think that's worked out the last couple of years?
I think it's fantastic, because everything in the membership committee is absolutely confidential. And so when decisions are being made, and as issues progress forward and things are dealt with, you have to have that historical trail there to know, why was this decision made in the past? What was going on? What was the atmosphere? What were the players that were involved? And so by having that link moving across the different membership committees, I think it's vital. It's something that Jessica and I started, and I know that Rory's looking at continuing. So I think you've got to have consistency through that particular seat on membership committee if you want to continue with your culture moving forward. Yeah. If you just roll everything out, then there's a lot of guessing as to what the decisions were made in the past. And you and I both know, if you don't learn from your history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Yep, absolutely. Now, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I've simply grown too big for BNI, what kind of response would you have for that person?
For me, that's absolutely ridiculous, because, you know, my investment in BNI is, as everybody else's, is around $1,200 a year at this point between renewals and room fees. And so for $1,200, I have a 50-plus I think we're at 59 today, Salesforce that's going to be talking about me and promoting me. And from a business point of view, that is just pennies on the dollar to have somebody out there promoting your business. So I don't know, even if you say I can't take any more referrals and I just can't get my business that can keep up with the trend, you know, I would just take a real hard look at yourself, and that's a great place to be in. But how can we grow your business? Because it's not BNI's fault. BNI's doing everything you want to do. So I don't understand how you ever grow too big for BNI. It'll always be a part of my business.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And speaking of your business, who are your clients in particular?
My clients are pretty diverse. So I would say they can be landowners, you know, property owners, even people that maybe don't own the property but are running businesses. As they grow and shrink, they need different locations that they can do that. Definitely anybody into development, and then obviously people that want to build their passive income through real estate. I'm really good at helping people understand the investment potential of real estate. There's great ways to invest your money and diversify. I happen to know real estate really well, and so I can take somebody who has zero experience and make them feel very comfortable and very safe and get a great return on their money. We're talking 10% return versus maybe a bank right now is less than 1%. So it's a very easy way to jumpstart your investment portfolio.
And your kind of tagline is you help people build wealth through real estate, right?
Absolutely.
And you'll have folks that come to you. You were mentioning this actually earlier today. We're here in Spring Hill, Florida, and State Road 50 is a place that's kind of growing, has grown significantly. So you mentioned you have folks that come to you and say, oh, man, I wish I had got in on the ground floor and you know, before 50 blew up. And apparently there's now another location where you see kind of the future is coming. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the whole thing about real estate is you have to strike before all of the movie theaters and, you know, Dick's and restaurants and everything that are there build up. And so the county is working very diligently because right now we only have one east-west evacuation route, which is Highway 50. Mm-hmm. They need two. And the second one has been deemed to be County Line Road. Okay. County Line Road this summer will go under the Ayers Extension construction that'll last 2 years. That land was set aside in Trillium over 20 years ago. To allow that connection from County Line to come up through Trillium and go out past 41 and connect out to 75. And as that is being developed, you can now see the development at Mariner and County Line. We have a brand new Taco Bell going in there now. We have the new Walgreens, the new McDonald's. That whole corridor is now going to become the new 50. And as people are looking to do real estate speculation, there's a ton of land on that road. There's a ton of commercial plazas that aren't fully rented out. Now is the time for you to get your foot in the door and establish your business on that new corridor because it is going to build, and it only makes sense. And by the way, it's 9 miles closer to Tampa than Highway 50. Mm-hmm. So if you don't think it's going to build out, just do the math on where people are driving up the Suncoast.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Now, if you have an individual out there thinking, you know what, I have some extra money, I would like to build more wealth through real estate, how would someone get a hold of Deshaun Bradley?
So very easy to reach out to me. I have my cell phone all the time, 352-293-6089. You can text me. You can give me a call. A lot of times if I'm in a meeting, I'll send you a response that I'll let you know. I'll call you right back. I try to call everybody within a 24-hour period or sooner if I can get to them. And then also you can email me. And again, simple email. It's just my name, Sean Bradley, which is SeanBradley at kw.com. So any of those are going to be great ways to reach out to me. And that way I can figure out exactly what you need and how I can help you.
Now, as you mentioned previously, we have currently 59 members in our BNI chapter. So we have 58 other individuals that are constantly looking out for individuals who might need your assistance. So what would be some things that, that we can be listening for to say, hey, you know what? I think Sean Bradley can help you.
So the great thing about real estate is everybody is generally interested in real estate in some fashion or another. You're going to hear people say things like, I wonder what's being built there. Or I wonder what this value of this property I have is. Is there any value in this land? I see this land next to mine that's being developed. I wonder if mine has any value. All those are easy triggers to say, let me introduce you to somebody that's going to be able to answer those questions. Objection handling is pretty simple in real estate. If somebody says, hey, I wonder what's going to be built there. And you say, I have this great person that can tell you what's built there. Well, I don't need to buy or sell. That's fine. I don't need to buy or sell you either. I'm in the relationship business. I'm going to be in Hernando County for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I'm a very easy person to meet. And then everybody should have a realtor in their portfolio, just like you have a doctor, a lawyer, people that you can call when you want to have these questions that you can trust and know what those values are, if you have friends that need values. So it's really easy because people tend to talk about real estate. It interests most people. So yeah, when you hear those triggers, just say, hey, I've got a great person for you to meet. No strings attached, no hard pressure sell. Be happy to meet you for any time.
Now, you are located, as we've mentioned, here in Hernando County, Florida. Is that the only place where you can help folks?
So I always tell people, if you're doing real estate on the planet, I need to be your first call. If I'm obviously licensed in the state of Florida, I'm operating within 90 miles of this location as my home territory. I have projects going on in Orlando and Jacksonville and Naples right now currently, but I also have a great referral network and a great teammates, whether it be in other states or even other countries. And the thing with that is, if you call me first and say, Sean, I'm going to do something in Sweden, that's great. I'm going to call my teammate in Sweden. I'm going to make sure that they take care of you and there's an accountability there. You can come to me and say, I'm not getting the answers I need, and that person has to be accountable to me. So right, it does give you a layer of protection as opposed to just meeting someone that you don't even know.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Well, as we like to do in these episodes, we like to close them with a brief kind of rapid fire section. So if you would, what is the best book? I'll first ask you the best business book you have ever read.
So the best book for my business for real estate is definitely The Millionaire Real Estate. It's called The Big Red Book, and it's written by Gary Keller. Mm-hmm. It is not just fantastic for Keller Williams agents. It's fantastic for anybody starting their own real estate business. It is the absolute building blocks to be successful as a realtor. And then my best book I've ever read would be The Art of War.
Sun Tzu there. And what is it that about that particular book that was so impactful for you?
I think any book that you read that changes your state of mind and how you think about things, that's going to be a book that's going to be impactful for you. That book I read in a particular time in my life when I was struggling to be a manager of people, and I thought if I worked harder and just showed a better example and just did more and took more on, that I would get better results in managing people. And when I read that book, I learned that that's not always what it takes. You have to change your mindset, and you don't always have to win every single time. A lot of times you win by losing to win the major war. So it's just a mindset change. Anytime I can take a training or read a book that changes my mindset or gives me another, you know, tool in the toolbox that I can use, it's going to be helpful.
Yeah, sure. Now, what is the most important networking trait in your opinion?
I think it's threefold. As far as networking, number one, you need to look the part. Whatever profession that you're doing, you need to be looking the best at that profession that you can look. I'm not here to say you have to wear a three-piece suit to everything, but whatever your profession dictates, you need to be dressed better than the person that you're up against. Mm-hmm. And then what's your demeanor? Do you have a positive attitude? Do you have a negative attitude? Do you have a look on your face that makes people not want to come up and talk to you? I think between dress and demeanor, that gets the door open. Mm-hmm. And then how you close is going to be through your education and how you know your services.
Now, for individuals out there, you know, maybe going to, you know, a bunch of different networking events, mixers and things like that on a regular basis, you also recommend have a plan when you go into those events, right?
You absolutely have to have a plan. When you go into an event, you are not just going to hang out and have lunch. And if you are, then you need to be happy with that result. But you don't want to go to five different events and then be unhappy that nothing came out of it because all you did is go have lunch and have a good time. You can get sucked into networking events by finding a very friendly face, someone that you connect with, and having a great conversation during lunch, but it's not going to get you business. So what's your plan when you go in? Are you going in to meet three specific people that are going to be vendors for you or business sources for you and you want to get their business cards, or the opposite of that? Are you going in to make sure three people meet you mm-hmm. that are going to be good referral sources for you? Whatever it is, have a plan, know it before you go in and execute it before you get sucked into talking to someone for a very long extended period of time that you may have a good time but not get any business.
I got you. Now, what is one or two business tips that you wish you had known maybe when you were younger?
I wish I would have known when I was younger that I didn't have to follow somebody else, that I could do it on my own. Mm-hmm. If I would have done it on my own earlier on, I would have been further along in my career. You grow up learning that you need to get a job, you need to follow someone, and the path is laid out for you. But at the end, everybody has the ability to do it on their own. So if I could go back and tell myself one thing, just have faith in myself, invest in myself, and do it on my own.
Yep. And another tip that you had also mentioned is you believe you are absolutely, the absolute average, rather, of the five people that you hang out around with. Is that right?
That's absolutely true. So that's the old you are who you hang out with that your mother used to tell you. I can tell you in business and professional life, you are the absolute average of the five people you hang out with. So if you want to move yourself up quickly, improve the group you're hanging out with.
Yep. And then finally, what is the most profound piece of advice that you've ever been given just about life in general?
My great-grandmother, when I was younger and through my teens, would always say to me, Sean, it's okay to be right, but you don't have to be so damn right. And I just always laugh about that because it's absolutely true. Everything you do, if you are able to show some grace to somebody who's maybe not seeing the full picture and struggling, and you can kind of get them through that, even though you may be right, and come out with a better business relationship or a better friend at the end, there's a lot to be said in that pretty simple quote.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mr. Sean Bradley, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Winning Edge Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Winning Edge Podcast. Please be sure to check out the show notes for contact information for each of our guests, links to their websites, and links to more information about the topics discussed in this episode. Until next week, happy networking!